as you'll have realized as Sarah read through this passage this morning, we've got three separate parts. This could have been 3 weeks worth of sermons. And so you're probably sitting there thinking, wow, we're going to get three sermons? Well, who knows? We have previously, though, looked at all of these three parts as a church a couple of times. We've looked at them separately, we've looked at them in depth. But today, we're going to look at what on first sight might seem three separate things, but actually we're going to look at them as a chunk of the larger story, the bigger story. So what we're going to do is to take a look at verses 10, 41 to 45, and 11, 1 to 10 together. And then we're going to come back to good old Bartimaeus at the end. So we start off by finding that there are 10 seriously wound up disciples. You know, they're really hacked off. Why are they wound up? Because I'm guessing that you'll have heard last week that, if you were here, that James and John, we weren't by the way, this is why I'm guessing, that James and John, the Thunder Boys, as they were known, had been egged on by their old mum to ask Jesus to make them more important than the others, to be up there. And no doubt it was getting just a little bit heated. You know, these disciples, we've met them, we've understood them, we've talked about them a bit, and they are, yeah, they're a feisty lot. So Jesus says, oh, come on, cool it. Just calm down. He gets them together to settle things down. And he says something, doesn't he, along the lines of, you know how kings and presidents throw their weight around, Jesus. And you know, you've seen, haven't you, when people just get a little bit of power, how quickly it can go to their heads. These aren't good role models, says Jesus. So stop trying to be like them. You need a really good role model to follow, says Jesus. Everyone does. So take me as your role model. That's what Jesus is saying to them. Take me as your role model. Stop wanting to be top dog and stop trying to get things to go your way and start looking out for other people first and getting on with doing things my way. You notice that all the way on their journey since that day when Jesus admitted to being Messiah, when Peter said, you're the Messiah, and Jesus, he admitted it. He didn't say, oh, man, no, couldn't possibly be. All the way, they've been arguing and they've been bickering and they've been scheming to try to see which one of them can be his right-hand man. Which one can be the boss? Which one can boss all of the rest of them around? And they've gone on and on and on. And each time, Jesus has put them straight. He said, oh, for goodness sake, stop it. You've really got this wrong. And he keeps telling them. Each time he says, whoa, hang on. Just calm it, boys. You have got this badly wrong. Your idea of greatness is way off mark. You need to hold on to the fact that great people in my kingdom will follow my example and they will always put others first. That is what great people in my kingdom will do. And that is what Jesus said to them time and time again, but these blokes just haven't got it. They can't see it and they don't want to hear it. And the two hard truths that Jesus has been teaching them, well, you remember those two things, won't you? They were that being great comes from serving others. That's number one. And that Jesus will die and rise again. In verse 45, Jesus wraps up both of these things in a single sentence. He does it very simply. I came not to be served, but to serve others and to give my life as a ransom for many. You know, these days we often think of a ransom, don't we, as something being paid to release a hostage. And the meaning here is similar, but it's a lot stronger. It was the price paid to buy a slave and to set him free or her free. And we're slaves. We're slaves to sin. Jesus came, but he had to come. He came to die on a cross and pay the price to purchase us from slavery and set us free. The cost of you and me being set free was way, way above our ability to pay. The only way you and I can be set free was for Jesus to do what he did, and then for us to trust him, to accept him, and to walk in his way and follow him. Let me just ask you, have you taken that road to freedom? Or are you still heading the wrong way? Are you still having a good punch up with Jesus and saying, I'll do it my way, matey? Please, if that's you this morning, just don't. It's not going to end well. And you never know what's around the corner, do we? Anyway, let's move on to the end of our passage. And that familiar telling of what happened on what we call Palm Sunday. When Jesus got on that donkey, didn't he, head into Jerusalem and was mobbed by adoring fans like some kind of rock star. We're not looking at the details this time around, as I've mentioned, but if you've missed any of our teaching on this, then please do listen to sermons online. There's some really incredible stuff in here, some really important stuff about prophecy. You know, if you're a bit dubious about what prophets wrote, well, I can tell you that it's some really important stuff we're not going to look at this morning. Daniel 7:13, Zechariah 9:9, Psalm 118, verses 19 to 29, and, well, lots of others. I'm just mentioning a few there. And when you read those and you see this event and you look at the timing, which is absolutely perfect, spot on to the day, it all makes sense. You're going to have to trust me for that until you've listened to the sermons on it or done some other research yourself. This morning, let's take a look at this through the eyes and ears of the disciples. Let's remember what the disciples are thinking. They're thinking their way, and Jesus is saying, no, it's my way. And here they are. The arguing and the fighting for pole position is probably still going. The working out who is most important is probably still going on. And also there's the fact that the disciples are still burying their heads in the sand, aren't they? They're burying their heads in the sand about who Jesus is and what he has to do, what it means to be Messiah. The fact that Jesus has been hammering onto them something they really don't want to know. Jesus will be crucified. I mean, serving a bloke who's going to be crucified, how does that work? It's all going on in their heads. And with that in mind, imagine you're there in the group. The crowds are huge. The temperature is probably something like it is here today, maybe slightly less humid and a little bit warmer. You've been following Jesus along the road. Others have heard about him. And they've headed to Jerusalem for the Passover. There are throngs and throngs, loads of people. Hundreds of thousands, possibly over a million people around in Jerusalem and in the surrounding area. They're there for Passover feast, and there is a great sense of excitement. The atmosphere is electric. You've never been to anything like this kind of event before. And there are more and more people as you're going along, and they're pushing in and pushing on, and the crowd goes out as far as you can see all around you, and you've got a great vantage point because you're just coming up and going over the hill, and there are crowds everywhere. And these 12 men are in the spotlight with Jesus. There they are. And I'm guessing that they're checking their hair, they're checking their clothes, and they're making sure that people around are seeing that they're in the crowd, or actually probably more importantly, they are the in crowd. And Jesus gets nearer and nearer, and the noise gets louder and louder, and they're aware that this is a big thing. And they are at the center of it, and they are important. This is the biggest thing they've ever seen, they've heard. And they hear those words being sung or being shouted about Jesus. Their Jesus. Their own personal Jesus. And he needs to be your personal Jesus. But this is their Jesus. And these words are being sung about them. Praise God, blessings on the one who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessings on the coming kingdom of our ancestor David. Praise God in the highest heavens. And you are in the center of that. Can you imagine how you're feeling, what you're thinking? Well, we have to imagine, don't we? Because we're not told. But what we can see from our Bible is that only after Jesus rose from the dead on that first resurrection Sunday, only then did the penny drop about what he had been teaching them all the way to Jerusalem. And so at this point, they may well have been thinking, wow, we were right. Jesus, you got it slightly wrong. We were right. Forget about that talk of dying, Jesus. You've got the whole nation with you. The whole country's behind you. Look at them. They love you. You see, like us, every one of those disciples will keep avoiding the hard teaching of Jesus. So for now, they ignore Jesus' words, or they avoid thinking about his difficult teaching in the hope that he might just change his mind. Might just change his mind. But I don't think we should be too hard on the disciples, do you? They're here in the middle of some huge event that is bigger than anything else they've ever seen, and they don't know what comes next. But we do know, don't we? We know what comes next. And so we've got no excuses when it comes to ignoring Jesus or avoiding taking his teaching to heart. So let's take Jesus seriously. Let's not be somebody who wants the floodlight, the spotlight on us, but be people who turn that spotlight onto Jesus and follow him in his way. Hard as it can be at times. Well, back to Bartimaeus. Simple story, isn't it? Blind man meets God, gets healed. Pretty simple. That's it. Have you ever wondered about Bartimaeus? Who he was? What his story's got to do with you? Because it has. Have you ever wondered anything about him? Or is it just something you've read in the Bible or never read before? Well, all we know is that most of us will, I think most of us are not Jewish. Anybody Jewish here? Bartimaeus probably was not Jewish. He may have been, he may not have been, but he probably wasn't. We know that pretty much because of his dad's name. It wasn't a local name. We know he was blind. We know he was healed, and we know he followed Jesus. And something that struck me this morning as Sarah was reading was that he said, when he spoke to Jesus, "My rabbi." That's all we know. But come on with me a journey. Come back a couple of thousand years. Imagine the dusty Jericho Road. A road that ran from Jerusalem through the Judean wilderness, barren, it's rising up on either side with rocky outcrops. There are caves, but there's little or no water except in the rainy seasons when there are sudden floods. But for now, it is dusty and it is hot. And as you get closer to Jericho, and we've got to remember that this Jericho is the Roman city called Jericho, which was built just further along the road from the ruins of the city Joshua had a hand in demolishing. Jericho was never rebuilt, but there was another city called Jericho built near it. And that's where you're heading. Well, as you get closer, there are some palm trees. And there are some workers in the fields outside the city gates. You can walk and see those palm trees today if you were to go there. This is where the blind, the lame, and the beggars sit. And if you look hard enough, you'll see Bartimaeus. So let's just ask him his story. You call out, "Hey, Bartimaeus." And he responds. He says, "Friend, why are you calling me? But as you are, can you spare a few coins?" You give him a couple of coins, and the lame around look up to you with their eyes pleading, desperate for hope. Well, what do you do? Well, that's up to you. But you ask Bartimaeus, "How come he's here? What's he doing there?" And he begins his story. It's been 5 years now, but it seems longer. I knew for a while that things weren't quite right. Just, things weren't going right. There was this mist across my eyes, but that harvest, I knew something was wrong. It wasn't just the dust and the heat haze across the field. I just couldn't see all of the other lads. It was just becoming a bit of a blur. But I had no idea that within weeks I'd be staggering around and losing my footing. I just hoped it was the summer dust and that it would improve. But the trips and the falls were getting too regular. And the joking from the others, "Come on, Bart, less wine," became more regular too. And I was worried. And my wife was expecting again, but what was I going to do? I wasn't exactly at the top of the hiring list in the marketplace, but I carried on as much as I could. Till that day when I couldn't even see my wife's shadowy features. We'd both known for months, neither of us daring to voice it to each other. I was going blind. Softly she said to me, "Bartimaeus, you can't see me, can you?" My eyes couldn't see, but they filled with tears. We sat there, and she said, "But what are we going to do? You can't work." I had no words. I just sat there and I cried for my family around me, and we were all frightened. We were all fearful. We're fearful because if I couldn't work, we couldn't eat. What would become of us? Our brothers helped out a bit, but we only just had enough before this. How are we going to cope? Well, there's only one way to cope. I learnt the way to the main road, to the spot where all of the other outcasts sat, and I begged for a living. Got the odd coin or two for a start, but they're all there, the lame, the simple, the deaf, the dumb, the absolutely insane. And if you can't see, you're not going to get the coin before anybody else. Just remember those first few months, as many an evening I'd return home and my little daughter would cry out, "Abba, have you bread?" And I would whisper, "No, oh dear, I'm sorry, not today." And she would hug my knees and say, "I love you." Well, that was it for a few years. Some days better than others. But today they say this Jesus of Nazareth, he's visiting the city. He's going to Jerusalem. He's going to call here on his way. That's what they say. "And I will call him." You thank Bartimaeus. Maybe you give him another coin or two. I don't know. That's up to you. But then you leave and you enter the city and you take the rest at an inn just inside the gate. Maybe you have some breakfast and a drink. And as you finish, you hear a real commotion going on. And the large crowd that's leaving the city suddenly is coming past you. And you're curious, so you follow on. And you find that Jesus is heading to Jerusalem. You're about to turn back, but you don't. You just see the beggars at that point. You see the mad, you see the deaf, you see the dumb, you see the lame, you see the blind, and you see them pushing to get up onto the verge of that road, out of the field, but it's too busy. And you can't properly see, you can't push through the crowd because it's too thick. And after 20 minutes or so, the crowd moves on, and you get to a point where Bartimaeus was, but he's gone. And you ask the people in the crowd, "What's happened?" And you hear that Bartimaeus was healed. And that he's at the front with Jesus. An hour or so has passed and you catch up with the man. At least this man looks like Bartimaeus. And then you speak and he recognizes your voice. "What's happened?" you ask. "Well," says Bartimaeus, it was true, he did pass. He walked right past. I heard the shouting. I heard them saying, it's the healer, it's the rabbi from Nazareth." So there was me, way back, blind as a bat, and well, I just hear this voice. This mad person shouting out, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Then it dawned on me, it was me shouting out. But there were plenty of other voices around me saying, "For goodness sake, shut up, Bart, sit down, he doesn't care about you." So I bawled all the louder, Son of David, have mercy on me. They muttered around me and they pushed in front of me. And I slipped and I fell back. So one last time I shouted, Son of David, have mercy on me. And there's a surge of people around me and someone says, he's stopped. And then I heard voices again. And they were talking to me. But I was way back. And those who pushed in front stood back. And they pushed me forward. They kept pushing me. I dropped my cloak. But they kept pushing forward. He wants you after all, they said, sounding puzzled. And then I feel this firm, warm hand on my shoulder. And I hear this voice. It's a soft voice, but it's the most powerful voice I've ever heard. It's quiet, but there is a power. What do you want me to do for you? Well, okay, you might think that's a really stupid question. And you probably think I'm thinking that's a stupid question as well, but it wasn't. I just knew that when I was asked that question, I wasn't going to be messing around. Well, maybe you're thinking at this point, well, what's happened to him on holiday? Since when have we started taking more notice of our imaginations than the Bible? Well, let me assure you that is not the point. The point is to see what Jesus has to say to us today from his word. But you know, there are some interesting characters in the Bible. And imagining their backstory is fine, as long as you don't make sure that you're telling people its truth. Setting the scene is important. In this case, the scene was set for that killer question, wasn't it? One you'll find in the Bible. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked. You see, my friends, I tell you this. Jesus doesn't stop asking that question. He's asking you that question today, right here, right now. He's looking into your heart and to mine, and he is asking, what do you want me to do for you? What is your blindness? He's calling out from the edge on that dusty road. Yeah, it may be a physical healing. He's certainly got the power and strength to do that. It may be that you've just got to come to the end of your own sight and stop bumping around with your own vision and grasp hold of his with both hands. His strength, his wisdom, his compassion, his vision. And you know why he's calling you and me today? Well, it comes down to a simple Greek word. It comes down to a Greek word which is hodos. It translates into English, into the word road or way. Hodos. Just think about this for a second or two. Bartimaeus was sitting by the hodos, by the way. He was sitting on the edge. But that wasn't what Jesus wanted. Jesus wanted Bartimaeus to follow him in the hodos, in the way. Do you get it? Do you see what he's saying? There is a huge difference. There's a danger that you and I might have Jesus pass us by. And we might enjoy it for a fleeting and valuable moment, but what good is that to you for eternity? What good is that to his kingdom? What good is that to Jesus? Because Jesus wants you in his way. He wants you off the edge of the road, sitting on the fence, saying, I don't know about this religion stuff. Well, I don't know much about religion, but I do know about Jesus. And he wants you in the way. But you know, I'll tell you as well, it might mean you sacrifice something precious. You might not just be losing your cloak. It could be something else. I don't know. But right now, Jesus is calling you and asking you, what do you need so you can really follow me in the way? What do you need? Now, there is not a kind of what do you want? It's what do you need? There's a big difference, isn't there? Well, there's a huge amount more theological stuff in this. It's a lot deeper than I've gone in this short passage. But we'll leave that for another time, or we'll go back to another sermon to look at that. Because this morning, I believe that Jesus is wanting us to see the simplicity of what went on here. Because we can make things complicated in the Bible, can't we? The Bible is not complicated, but we can make it complicated. He wants to see the simplicity of what goes on here and what he wants to do in your life today. Three very short, simple points I'm going to finish with. Number one, when we're taking through difficult times as a church or as individuals, don't ever believe that that's where you will stay, in the eye of the storm. Bartimaeus was led into a time of suffering and sadness, but God didn't leave him there. God no doubt used that time, but it wasn't his plan. He has a plan for your life. He has a plan for my life. And if you need reassurance of that, then there are plenty of places you can turn up in the Bible. You could try 1 Kings 3, 1:14, Jeremiah 29, 11-13, 1 Thessalonians 5, 16-24, 2 Thessalonians 2, 14, 17, plenty of others which I could rattle off, but you probably won't take down. But trust me, trust God, and more importantly, he has a plan for your life. Bartimaeus acknowledged what was obvious to Jesus. Jesus knew he was blind, didn't he? He got a blind man coming up. He's not going to say, oh, what's wrong with you, matey? He knew he was blind. He knew he needed healing. He knew he needed Jesus. So did Bartimaeus know that. And he had a longing to follow Jesus. Brings me to the second point. You and me, we need Jesus. We don't just need a bit of Jesus. We don't just need a little bit occasionally. We don't just need a lot occasionally. We need Jesus permanently. You need to call through the crowd and put up with the jeers and the comments. The fact that people will say he doesn't care about you. All the put-downs that you will get in your life, and you'll get plenty of them. If you're not a Christian, there'll be plenty of people telling you you're right. You need to push through the crowd and ignore the others and listen to the truth. People will tell me, they'll tell you that you don't deserve Jesus, and they are right, we don't. But he loves us that much that he came for us. They'll say he's no use to us. They're wrong. They'll tell us we're deluded. We're miserable. We're little whingers. We get in the way of fun and pleasure. When they do that, be sure to call out all the more loudly, Son of David, have mercy on me. And he will hear you. You can call out whatever you want. You don't have to give a biblical language. You just call out Jesus from your heart. He will hear you in his perfect timing. He will call you. And he will lovingly ask, what do you want me to do? And I'm not just talking about the first time around. I am talking about the first time around. But we all can go off track, can't we? We can all go off the hodos, off the way. We can all find ourselves on the verge occasionally, parked up, having a picnic. Jesus says, come, get back in the way. It's no good for you. Get left behind. Come with me. He knows exactly the very thing you need. He knows exactly what you need, and he knows exactly when you need it and where you need it. The thing you need to help you follow Jesus more closely and to give him the glory, that thing you will receive if you ask him. My last point follows on. What was the point of Bartimaeus' healing? Was it that just so that he could see? No, it was to enable him to follow Jesus. It was only to enable him to follow Jesus. I'm sure Bartimaeus appreciated being able to see. Our intention has to be to follow Jesus. And to follow Jesus alone. We receive the greater blessings when we get our motives in line with his will. When we get ourselves on track in the hodos, in the way with him. And when we're living in his will, and living in his strength. I'm going to say again before we close, Jesus is asking you and me today, what do you want me to do for you? Reply, won't you, in the way that Bartimaeus did? My rabbi, my Jesus, my Lord, my God, because there is no one else that can do it for you, only Jesus. Just sit quietly for a few seconds as we come to a close of looking at this passage. Jesus says to you today, what do you want me to do for you?